Harper Audio presents Passages in Caregiving, Turning Chaos into Confidence. Written and read by Gail Sheehy.
Introduction. This book was inspired by my journey as a caregiver for my husband, Clay Felker. The story of how we survived and even thrived over the last 17 years of Clay's life is threaded throughout these pages, along with the stories of many other inventive caregivers and the helpful strategies that we have all learned the hard way. But before we begin, I need to give you a little context. When people grow older, get sick, and die, their formerly robust lives are often forgotten. To be forgotten is something we all fear. It's why we make an effort to leave a legacy. Obituaries that celebrated Clay as a journalistic giant and magazine pioneer and legendary editor all stopped before the rich final period of his life. It was not a period of public celebrity, but one of quiet celebration. To appreciate the challenges we faced in those years, readers unfamiliar with Clay's history should know something about the man in his prime. Born in 1925 in a racially segregated border state, Missouri, Clay's insatiable curiosity always led him to cross boundaries. Not content to be cosseted in the safe white suburb of Webster Groves, he ventured into the black neighborhood of St. Louis, hungry for the jazz music of Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald. He found jukebox vendors who sold, as they were called at the time, race records for 5 cents apiece. Jazz became the soundtrack to Clay's life. He was always in love with New York, from the time he first read The New Yorker and Esquire as a shy, skinny preteen. He imagined the urbane editors of such magazines dressed in black tie, ready to slide into limousines at the drop of an invitation to the dinner tables of the city's power brokers. Editing the student newspaper at Duke University and the base newspaper during his 3 years in the Navy was a mere out-of-town tryout. 2 seasons of traveling the country as a sports writer covering the baseball Giants exposed him to America's big league towns. But to his mind, he was still a rube until he learned how to be an editor in America's premier city of ambition, New York. He came close during the late 1950s and early 1960s when he was one of 3 young Turks at Esquire, vying for the paternal nod to become editor-in-chief. Every week, for several years, each rival threw out his best story ideas, and the other 2 shot them down. When Clay lost this Blood on the Walls contest to Harold Hayes, he went on to the fabled New York Herald Tribune. Asked to create a Sunday supplement, he rejected pablum and instead mirrored his primary color vision of New York. It smacked readers with glaring cover images of their city and hooked them with irresistible food and cultural features. He drafted the paper's 2 best reporters, legends in the making, Tom Wolfe and Jimmy Breslin, and hounded them into producing must-read stories almost weekly for 4 years. Wolfe, the Tidewater, Virginia gentleman, had a fiendish eye for deflating the vanity of Manhattan swells. Breslin, the snarling Irish bad boy, had a thirst for Damon Runyon-esque guys and dolls. When the Herald Tribune folded in 1967, Clay raised $1 million and combined it with his severance pay to give birth to his dream, the first magazine devoted entirely to one city, New York. It was 1968, and the country was coming apart at the seams with 2 shattering assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Senator Robert Kennedy. New York City was in an economic tailspin. Racial fury seethed in Harlem while Columbia's anti-war students were chanting, "Revolution!" I was there in graduate school. Out of the turmoil of 1968, Clay fathered a new generation of star journalists, among them Gloria Steinem, whom he first turned loose on politics and later showcased with her own magazine, Ms., inside the pages of New York. Clay and his tribe invented an alternate New York, a circus of street culture as seen through the eyes of a new young generation of escapees from the suburbs. Most of his writers were rebels with a cause, free living and loving on the new frontier, far from the confines of white flight, fascinated by every ingredient in the herb and stew pot, the Big Apple. It was within this turmoil that Clay and I began our relationship, challenging each other with ideas, chasing stories, wrestling through the feminist revolution to educate, or annihilate, each other, falling in love, and resisting the convention of marriage. After a whirlwind 17-year courtship, we finally married in our middle years in 1984 and adopted a child. Clay was a progressive, but he never had any fixed ideological point of view. There was no formula his writers had to fit. He often said people do their best work when they are valued for their personal vision and not just for their professional skills. This became the Felker effect.